Welcome to Catalyst Conversations, the podcast that brings you real-world stories and solutions from a wide variety of acoustic experts. Each episode, we'll dive into a different topic from the world of acoustics, such as architectural and industrial noise control, seismic and vibration restraint, acoustical testing, or innovative design and engineering of sound control products. Our experts have decades of experience in this space and are eager to share their expertise with you. Join us in making the world a quieter place.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. We're going to talk about data centers, the onslaught and beginning of data centers popping up all over the world. And we're going to talk about the noise that data centers can create. It's just the nature of the designs. Nobody's trying to create noise. It's just when you look at a large data center, you have a lot of computers. To have those computers run, you need power. To supply them with power, whether it's municipal or direct power, constant power backup, you're going to have a lot of heat. And so with that, a lot of heat, you're going to have a lot of cooling. And with cooling, you're going to have mechanical equipment that makes noise, from the generators, backup generators making noise, to cooling making noise. So we're here to discuss all that today and also noise control solutions. So I welcome you. My name is John Sofra with Kinetics Noise Control. I've been in industry for noise control and both supply and exhaust ventilation design systems for about 35 years and really enjoy helping customers. I'm a mechanical engineer and got my business degree, but so it helps me see things from various avenues of design and financial aspects of projects, both retrofit and new construction. And my colleague here, Robert Hassler. Robert, why don't you introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Robert Hassler, and I've been involved with acoustics, probably 30-something years as well. My background is in the test market. I worked in the design development and for sheet metal ductwork and acoustical products. So I've had 25 years working in a lab. I'm a PE. I'm involved with the ASHRAE and AMCA, and we discuss and work on a lot of standards, and I deal with solving noise issues in the environmental, industrial, and commercial markets. So, and today we're going to discuss a little bit more about this, and at least the data centers in particular, and I'll let John go further. And well,
thanks, Robert. Thank you. And Robert and I have worked together for many, many years in different aspects, different companies, and so it's kind of funny. And we're two flips of the coin, but it's a great way to balance that teeter-totter, if you know what I mean. So, Robert, you know, one of the most interesting things that have been happening lately, especially since just before around 2019, but definitely crescendoed in 2022, and that was the huge development where we're seeing data centers go up all over the world, especially in North America, especially in the United States. You know, we're seeing a lot of the data centers coming up, and they can be located in many different places. Sometimes we're seeing them in the metropolitan areas where they're actually shoehorned in a campus of data center buildings. Or they could be in the suburbs where they're putting them next to large residential communities, 500,000 home subdivisions. And then we can also put it rurally. And you know, my thing is, Robert, is, you know, I think a lot of people ask, you know, how do they decide where they're going to put this campus of data center buildings? You know, some people say, why didn't they put it in my backyard? Some people said, why did they put it in my backyard? So what are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are is most of the time they look at where's the usage and who needs the product. Obviously, metropolitan areas where a lot of banks and a lot of, you know, financial institutions a lot of times will drive a lot of these. But some of it will be more generic, you know. Google and Amazon and all these big companies have databases on all kinds of things. And they want to put it somewhere where it's close to a metro hub where the, you know, it's like your old dial-up line. You don't want to be a really long way away because your data transfer rate between the two locations is a long time. So they want to be close to where it's happening and close to where it can get the power and where it can be easily accessed if need be, and also in a relatively secure location, because most of these are compounds, or, you know, it's a dedicated building just for this.
Right. They're just data. In other words, data is security is huge on these, right? And people say, well, why do we need data centers all of a sudden? And I think to myself, I said, what do you do every day? You use your phone, you use the internet. A data center is really the brains and the engine of the internet.
Oh, yeah. And you'll see that all the time, especially just watch someone freak out when they have no cell service or no phone, or you can't look something up online. It's like, I can't know it. I don't know what to do.
And yeah, you freak out. You start to have that cold sweat.
So that's why they're located at large metro areas, because that's the shortest wire to get it to the transmitting location.
Right, and a good way to put that is, I know sometimes when they test, like if my internet, personal internet's down at home, I'll call my internet provider, and one of the things they do is they'll send up what they call a ping out, right? They send a ping to you, and then it pings and reverts back to speed test, and that's the latency. How quick does that go? How they want quick, right?
Right. And a lot of times I'll even tell you, this is the one in Cleveland, this is the one in Cincinnati, this is the one in Chicago. It's like sometimes you get a really long pings. It's like and sometimes it's my equipment, and sometimes it's their equipment, and sometimes it's just weather between the two.
But that's the latency. And I think the other thing that we see in data centers too, on their locations, is, you know, they may have what we call a campus. There may be 6-7 buildings in a campus, and it's pretty big. And we're talking big buildings, a data center of power, cooling, and computers and secure information. But you may have a large company that is in that handles data centers. And you had mentioned one before, Google, Amazon, others. There's many, many. There's financial institutions that have them. There's many out there. But they won't just have a hub or a campus in, let's say, a territorial area, like maybe in the Northeast. Somebody may have one in, say, Virginia, campuses of data centers. That same company will also have a campus maybe in Southwest U.S. or the Western U.S., maybe Arizona or something. So although they have a campus close, they also want them remote, because you have to look at floods, natural disasters, power outages, and you want to make sure that you can quickly revert to an area that hasn't been affected negatively. So it's interesting. I think one thing when it comes to acoustics, Robert, you and I were ran into this a number of years ago, it was, part of it was an oil and gas, but since we're talking about data centers, the same thing is true. Is some people say, well, why don't we put, people complain about noise when you put a data center in the inner city or the metropolitan or next to a large subdivision. Why don't we just put it out in a field somewhere, very rural area? And you and I ran into this before, where actually that's not a solution either. And one of the reasons were is the ambient noise at night in a cornfield or many acres of farming land is very, very low. So, instead of running about 50 dBA at night or something like that at the property line, you may be looking at 30 dBA at night, and any noise above that is going to be noticeable. So it gets even more stringent.
Well, and another thing is a lot of times, even if they did put them out in the middle of nowhere, that area becomes developed. And in 5 years from now, it's going to have houses all around it or communities around it. And now it's right in the heart of a little area.
In the heart of it.
And
if you build it, they will come, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's one that the pipe size of the data going in and out of this data center is only so big. So, you get too much traffic going at the same time. We've all experienced slow download speeds on movies and software, but it's all about having enough capacity for the environment. And obviously there are places that be prime candidates for large data centers in a general area, Chicago being one, because there's a lot of stocks market and other things going on. Same with New York, any metro city. Even the large university downtown. We're here in Ohio, so Ohio State University. I wouldn't be surprised if they have multiple data centers, even just here in Columbus. just because of some of the large engineering things that they're working on in other, you know, professions, that they're doing research and development and they need that speed. Whereas, you know, Joe Farmer, it's plowing his crop, it's using GPS to get his tractor to drive up and down the rows now. So, I mean, it's one that everybody needs access at some point, or getting to that point. And that's why we just need to have capability everywhere. And sound is becoming more of an issue no matter where we put them.
Well, I think that, you know, now that we kind of discussed on why there's all these data centers cropping up. And I think one of the key things is the data center companies do give a lot of thought into the proper area to put data centers. They don't just flip a coin. There's a lot of research put in. And so I think we could, you know, we were able to explain some of that. I hope you our listeners had picked up on some of that. So I hope it's helpful.
Well, and another thing being that the power, I had heard a stat somewhere, I don't know how accurate it is, but within the next 5 years, 40% of our electrical usage is going to be going towards maintaining data centers and computers.
Oh, it'll be amazing.
And it's like,
it'll be
amazing. That's even before you figure in electric cars and all the other things they're supposed to have.
Yeah, so, that they're supposed to have. So it's huge.
And add AI into that, and it's going to be crazy.
Now, we get a lot of questions from people. I know you and I, since we're in the noise control business, and we manufacture, Kinetics manufactures noise control products, whether it's vibration isolation, wind restraint, seismic restraint, or whether it's airborne noise, which is really what we're talking most here is about airborne noise when it comes to community noise issues. And sound is just energy, and it propagates in all distance, in all directions, outdoors, and the outdoor, you know, geographic, topographical area and makeup is very important. And when we're getting calls on a daily basis, I want to talk a little bit about that, because I know I get calls from various people when it starts a noise control issue for a data center. Sometimes I get a call in when the data center is just being designed, which is the best place, design it up front. And then sometimes I get a call from a data center that's already existing and they're having some noise issues.
Even had people that'll just call up. We have a noise problem. We don't know what to do about it. We don't even know who to go to.
Right.
And in some places there are actually zoning and codes where they have to be at a certain level of the property line. In other places, they just want to be good neighbors, you know, and it varies everywhere you go.
But anyway, so what we have here is, you know, people that call us, you know, a lot of times I'll get a call from an acoustical consultant, or I'll get a call from an architect or a mechanical engineer that's laying in mechanical cooling equipment and say, I think we're going to have an issue here. What other people have you gotten calls from on initial calls where we start talking about noise control for a data center?
I've had calls that are from John Q. Public that's sitting along the road, and he's saying, I hear this humming at night and it drives me nuts, and it's this big building over here. I don't know anything about it, but I did a basic measurement using my phone where I downloaded some sound levels, and this is what numbers I get. Where do I go from here, and what options do I have to make this go away? Or how can I treat this? Do we go locally? Do we go to the, you know, our zoning commission?
Do I go to the city? What do I do, right?
Yeah, and a lot of times you get people that are just tired of hearing it. And when you're tired of hearing it, then you get to start saying, even if I have to pay for it myself. And a lot of times they obviously try and get the cost to be done by the source of the noise. But in some instances, they're willing to actually even pay for it out front. You know, it's like...
What I know... that I'm finding out a lot is what I really like. And, you know, you and I have a lot of times seen noise move into an area. And every now and then you'd have a good neighbor, let's say a factory or whatever the noise source is, they end up being a good neighbor. Maybe they're within city noise ordinance limits, but they want to be a good neighbor. Even if they're if they're allowed the noise that they're producing, they want to get it quieter. They want to be a good neighbor. And what I've noticed is, all data center requests we get. Like, let's say we get a call from an owner, a data center owner, and whether it's one of their engineers, their design team, they have a corporate mandate to take care of the community and their employees. So indoor noise is of a concern, and they take care of it, but they also want to take care of noise outdoors. And I think that's been a really nice thing that we've seen over the years. That used to be a fight sometimes with other companies now, but data centers seem to stay right on target. So,
well, and also in that venue, I mean, there's always options. I mean, there's, you know, a 5 dB noise drop. There's, I mean, there'd be 10 dB. How much noise do you need? How much do you need to lower it? And in some cases, even just them doing something, it makes them happy. You know, just having some reduction.
When we look at the noise sources, though, that people are calling us, I know a lot of time, you know, it's basically mechanical cooling equipment is the biggest noise source. And then also the generator rooms.
Yes. And generators make a lot of noise.
I mean, diesel generator room, you can walk into that room and they range anywhere from 102 to 110 dBA.
Right. And that's inside the room now.
That's inside, yeah.
So you got to worry about the people inside the room. And you also got to worry about how much noise is being generated outside the building. Because obviously the exhaust is going out.
Like the fresh air intakes or downstream of the radiator cooling, if it's not remote cooled. So we want to take a look. We want to look at the engine exhaust, just like mufflers on your car. But we also want to look at the fresh air intake to that generator room. And also the discharge off of there. So that's been one of the biggest things that we tend to use our acoustic louvers and silencers on, are those openings for generator rooms.
Oh, yeah, because you got to get the heat out, because electronics make heat.
And a generator itself is extremely important, because if they're using the backup generators, that means the there's something wrong with the municipal power. And we can't have, as consumers of data transfer, we can't have interruptions. Just like we talked before, we get quite upset as
if our cell phone doesn't work. It's like, yeah.
So, you know, that's one of the things we use a lot is the silencers. We also can line, when we talk about the indoors in a generator room, a lot of times we'll use our model instead of our silencers or acoustic louvers to make sure noise isn't breaking out of the building itself to the neighbors. We also indoors can soften the walls and the ceiling of a large generator room, a generator room that might have, you know, 6, 10, 12 or more 500 kW generators in it. And that's just an example. Sometimes generators are much larger, sometimes they're smaller. But, you know, we will use like our Model S4 sound absorption panels for the walls and ceiling, our wave baffles, kinetics hanging baffles. These are all absorbers. These are things that are going to at most get you 10 to a 12 dBA reduction with a lot of coverage of the walls and the ceiling. They're all Class A fire rated, which is important.
Another thing is most all of these are going to be made out of concrete to survive Armageddon. You know, I mean, they're right. Designed to be, you know,
smart,
you know, able to survive bad weather or tornadoes and whatnot. They're often concrete or concrete block, and reflective surface noise surface everywhere. So, I mean, it's one of those that anything we can do to absorb that noise and the noise going in and out of that box, so to speak.
So you made a good point. You made a good point is that the noise within that generator room, for instance, there's noise, and noise is, I always say sound is energy. Noise is a sound that is unwanted, and it's huge energy levels.
Right. And in a concrete room, it's a reverberation room, and it just bounces around and it never goes anywhere because it doesn't absorb it. There's nothing there to absorb that energy.
Until you open up a fresh air intake or discharge off that room. And now that sound wants to get out. It says, let me out, right? It's too loud in here. Even the noise is saying it's too loud. Let me out and bother the neighbors.
So a lot of times we have to get it down, what is it, below 80 for OSHA and for exposure of the people working.
Without PPE for 8-hour time window.
And you don't want 85 because you're in your building next to your house, because especially at night. I wouldn't want to be sleeping next to an 85 dBA noise.
And especially those, a lot of times too, even if they don't use the backup generators, a lot of times they test the backup generators at a very low demand time, which used to be about 4 a.m. in the morning. That'll definitely wake you up. That may have changed.
Well, in some places they will only do their testing during daylight hours, just for the reason of the code limits their noise level when they're running. It's different during the daytime than it is at night. And nighttime is more stringent, so they don't do their tests at night. They do it during the day, so that way during non-emergency conditions, they can get away with it being a little louder. Now, obviously, if there's an emergency going on and a hurricane hits or a tornado or whatever, and the power's out, well, number one, your ambient's going to be different because all the home air conditioning units won't be running. And
I did see in a city's sound ordinance, municipal sound ordinance, where it actually commanded, I don't know if that's the right word, but it actually says you needed to test things under the nighttime code.
A lot of times we design for the nighttime period because we don't know when it's going to be run. And so we will intentionally design for the worst conditions. So that way, when it gets to be the daytime conditions, it's, you know, even better. You meet the spec even better.
Well, getting back to our original discussion on the generator room, just to conclude with that, at least that item, a generator room, what Robert and I were saying is that maybe putting acoustic, like, let's say putting acoustic louvers or ventilation silencers in the openings, outside air intake and discharge openings of that room, work fine, but you can fine tune that by putting absorption on the walls so the noise within the room is actually reduced before it can even propagate through the opening. So there's that balancing act. Yeah. And it always comes to balancing cost, initial cost and labor versus how much noise control you get. And then you also have space limitations. So where you know a 10-foot long silencer might work, well, wait a minute, I only have 4 feet. I don't have 10 feet. So you have to apply a lot of Kinetics products. The nice thing with Kinetics is we make so many things. I was talking to somebody the other day and they were asking me all these questions from vibration isolation to rooftop air handling units on curbs and sound within duct systems and separation of noise and walls and ceiling and then reverberant noise control within a space. And then they were looking at barrier walls outdoors and they were just asking me all these questions. When we got to the end, we said, wow, Kinetics, we actually manufacture, we have a huge toolbox and manufacture all products that address all those concerns. So we can give a lot of composite solutions. So that's interesting. The next thing to get on to, I think, is air-cooled chillers. Air-cooled chillers where you have the up-blast fans and you, on the top, and you have the basically a big air conditioning unit, right? But an air-cooled chiller, and you have the compressors on the side. You have the whining of the compressors and the mid to low-frequency drone of the up-blast fans. And a lot of times around a roof of a data center. What do we usually do to tackle any of that?
Most of the time, it depends on where the relationship is between the person that hears the noise and where the noise source generated. If it's up on a roof, sometimes you can get away with just a barrier wall, block the line, direct line of sight, and direct path for the noise to go. Other times where you may have it more difficult to block the direct line of sight, where, you know, your next door neighbor is a five story apartment building and you're only your data center is only a two story, then you'll be able to look in the top. Well, in that case, then we have to deal with, you know, pergola on the top or directing the sound to going a different direction.
You said pergola. That's our noise block pergola. So for those of you out there that may not know what that means, that look at a lot of people's backyard patios and you have some, there's a thing out there called a pergola on a lot of patios. It's a thing where you see a bunch of the trusses. You got like maybe posts in the corners, trusses. You got.
Yeah. It limited blocks the sun limitedly.
Yeah. It looks like that. That's why we use the noise block pergola. It looks like that. You can check that out.
And it's basically a number of flat panels that are acoustically absorptive, running perpendicular to the airflow path that allows a lot of airflow to go by. But as the airflow goes by, it absorbs some of the noise. So It's a modified version of what you could also say is a silencer, because it's in an airflow path and it has absorption.
You know what we found out though too, and I'm not going to give all the answers away here. It's a lot of it's proprietary, but there's a lot of thought and a lot of SolidWorks and finite element acoustic modeling and back pressure and modeling and computational fluid dynamics, where over the years, Kinetics, since the early 2000s, now we were developed in 1958, founded, but in the early 2000s, we did a lot of studies with air-cooled chiller manufacturers. And a lot of people said with an air-cooled chiller, when this is true, an air-cooled chiller isn't meant to be have any kind of airflow or pressure drop restriction to it. It's not meant to. So over the years, Kinetics did a lot of research on how to place these baffles, how to place these pergola panels, the spacing of the pergola panels, the distance between the upblast fans and the bottom of the pergola panels, access for maintenance. We looked at all kinds of different pressure drop flow effects. And it's not just something where you can look at a picture and say, oh, I'm going to do this. I guarantee you, if you don't know what you're doing, you're going to make mistakes.
Well, and another thing you need to look at is most of these manufacturers do not allow you to do anything to attach to their equipment. So we always design so it's nothing's connected to the equipment, because in some cases the equipment's actually designed to support itself. It's not designed to hold any additional load.
And what was nice with Kinetics on that, so what Robert's saying is we've seen some people out there try to design a noise block pergola system or a chiller stack, and they attach it right to the equipment. Well, that air-cooled chiller was not meant to take any of this added vertical dead load weight or the wind forces when it hits the side of the stack or pergola. And if you look in the fine print of the people trying to do it, it'll say, well, it's up to others to make sure that works. No. Robert and I, early in our careers, remember, Robert's been out there for about 32 years. I've been out there for 35 plus years. We were always taught you never touch a manufacturer's piece of equipment. You never touch it. And what's really nice is, so we never do. Everything of ours, it's separate of the equipment, supported separately, designed so it's invisible to the equipment when it comes to pressure drop and airflow. And Kinetics has all our own structural engineers on staff, which is nice. So I really like that, Robert. That has really helped us.
Yeah, well, and also the equipment's mounted using vibration isolation, which we do that product as well. But you just throw all the spring sizes and all the vibration loading all out of whack if you add to their structure. So. And you don't want to be buying it again, so.
Well, a lot of times, too, you made a good point there. You didn't come out and say it, but I know what you're thinking. Is we always agree, you and I and many in industry agree, it's always best to design this noise control at time of new construction. It's always best. But a lot of times things get budgeted out. So we are often performing retrofit work on something that may have been up for a year, and the owner may have said, well, let's see, we'll budget that out. Maybe we won't have a problem. And then a year later, the neighbors complain or the community complains because of the noise. And so they have a problem. But Robert, you made a good point. If somebody goes in there blindly and starts adding a weight to the equipment that's vibration isolated, you're right. They'll throw everything out of whack.
Right, right. And if you start doing a coil bind and now you have a short circuit structurally and maybe making even more.
And then they have indoor vibration noise, which turns into the structure of the building turns into a tuning fork indoors, and everybody's complaining about it.
Right. Or you have equipment failure because things are not bouncing like they're supposed to.
Torsion. Yeah. So the next thing we have is the similar to air-cooled chillers, we would often have cooling towers. And the same thing, induced draft cooling towers are cooling towers that do not have a lot of external static. So when you start to apply noise control to them, like silencers, you got to be very careful on any kind of airflow restrictions. And actually, Kinetics Noise Control, one of our engineers, Tom Page, who passed away a number of years ago, Tom, great guy, I learned a lot from him. And he actually did an ASHRAE paper on noise control for induced draft cooling towers. And it can be done, and the paper shows it can be done, and we have actual case studies where it was done. But there was, once again, a lot of CFD, computational fluid dynamics, a lot of SolidWorks modeling for structure and just and finite element acoustics that was done till we came up to where we are today, where we're almost automatic on our solutions, which is nice. We have, Robert, I think the biggest thing is the cinder block concrete equipment yards, which can have any kind of equipment in it,
right
next to a building. What are the things we do there to soften those surfaces up? Because it's a big reverberation chamber, right? The noise reflects and actually makes more noise.
Right.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, most time we end up, first and foremost, we look at where's the receiver. Always like, where's Waldo? You know, if he's on a balcony looking down in it, or is this the tallest thing in the neighborhood? And if it's the tallest thing in the neighborhood, well, now we just got to worry about trying to reduce the noise in the local area inside the, you know, the concrete encased or the yard.
We're trying to soften those walls.
We'll use what we call our KNP panel, which is a metal panel with insulation in it that's mounted directly to the walls. We'll use our curtain products. A lot of times we'll call it the KFA.
The outdoor
would be the KFE ENV version, which has got the UV inhibitors in it, so that way you don't worry about the sun breaking it down.
And it's very cost effective for those retrofits.
It's one of those, and it's easy for them to mount, because ease of mounting. We try and make it so that the janitor for the school can put it up, and if they need to do maintenance.
And that's not a ding. Everybody, just so you know, that's not a ding on the janitors. What we're saying is a janitor is not specialized in putting up acoustic products, but the way we design them is your general maintenance janitorial crew, but however you define that, is we try to focus on, you know, you have an initial cost for product, but we also want to advise that it's easy to install. So we're not trying to make a ding at anybody, we're just trying to make a point. And so we love all the janitors out there. In fact, if you can make a little more have a little more opportunity to install stuff, more power to you.
Right. And so we always try and design that everything's completely bolt together, so you don't have to worry about dealing with the welding people on site. So yeah, you can get away with doing it with, you know, most hand tools are readily available. You can put most of these things up. I mean, electric drills, you know, hammers, nails, you know,
or like we say, when all you have, like when we say, when all you have is a vice grip, make it work, right? No, I'm kidding.
Right.
Sorry.
So, I mean, the curtains, a lot of times will be a wooden furring strip that gets mounted on the concrete block wall, and they'll use lag bolts to fender washers on it to hold it up to it. I mean, it's not super rocket science.
Grommets. Yeah.
It's not rocket science. So it's just a matter of get this on the wall, cover up the hard reflective surface with this softer material that absorbs some of the noise and keeps it reflecting and just being in that little reverberant box.
What do we do sometimes? Let's say your equipment yard. Let's say your air-cooled chillers, there might be three or four in the equipment yard. It doesn't matter how many there are, but let's say there's an air-cooled chiller in an equipment yard, and that air-cooled chiller sits on a 6-inch pad. It's a 98-inch tall from base to top of guard on the uplast fan, so that's 98 plus 6. What is that? 98.6, 104. Did I do that right? So let's say it's 104 inches tall, and let's say your equipment yard wall, your hard equipment yard wall, cinder block or concrete, is at the same elevation as the top of the chiller. What do we do then? We soften the walls of the equipment yard, but what do we do about outblast fan noise?
Well, assuming that your neighbors are all at or below, you're still going to have some noise getting over the top. So a lot of times we'll do what we call a chiller stack, which is basically an elevated barrier wall to reduce the noise from the prop fans on the top of the unit. So that way it helps block and absorb some of the noise coming from the prop fans, and which is in general is one of the noisiest parts of the unit. Prop fans on the top for the airflow, that's the bulk of your noise. Now, in some cases, there'll be a compressor or something to that effect. Usually that's only an issue on like a rare occasion, because it's a tonal noise. It's a little bit more, but it's down inside your yard. It's down on the bottom, so it's not as easy for that to get over.
We use our quiet shield. For that.
Yes, we call it a quiet shield product, and that's basically a little curtain enclosure that gets a angle frame constructed to support it around the compressors, or the other pieces of equipment in the bottom that are making the noise. So it's basically a little tiny curtain enclosure that's installed just to address that one noise source.
And it's interesting too, because sometimes you can have what I call vertical compressors where there's a little gang of them, or you have a horizontal compressor where there's one or two on it. But it's really interesting. And the reason we came up with that Quiet Shield product was what we were finding was people were putting these very custom fit wraps, noise control wraps, on the compressors and the oil separators in the area. Okay, they were doing that, and it was really cool. It was expensive. It was pretty until the service team had to come in and service it, and they would unstrap buckles and straps, and they would take it off, and they'd set it aside. They'd fix whatever they or maintain whatever they had to, and then they'd look at it and say, "I don't know how to get that back on." So, because it's so complicated.
Right, and there's so many other wires and hoses running in and out of it.
But they didn't know how to put the wrap back on, right? Because it had all these clasps.
Right, so we're basically making a whole box to cover the whole works up that you just take off one side and you have complete access to all of it.
Right. And it was funny. How many did we come up to where people say, hey, it wasn't making noise before, now it is. We go there, find out that they took that custom wrap by others off of there. And it was too hard to put it back, so now it was exposed completely. We put a Quiet Shield in there, and Quiet Shield's the way they're built, like that box. It's really cool because you inherently pull off a panel that might be, there might be multiple panels on here, and they're very light, but they block noise and absorb sound. And they might only be 2 foot square or 2 foot by 4 foot. And when you take it off with the fender wash, lag screws and wing nuts, you take that off. You service it, and then you look at this panel on the ground. You say, oh, how do I put that? Well, it's easy. You put it on, and you put these grommets on these studs, and boom, boom, you're done. So it's been well received for basically by maintenance, but always making sure that after the product is maintained, the compressors, that the noise control goes back in easily. And I think that's important on all of our projects.
Yeah, and the benefit of that also is you really don't have to worry about heat, mainly for the reason of, you're pumping the coolant through this thing, and the coolant's going to the big radiators up on top. So, I mean, it's designed to self-cool.
When we were developing that product about 12 years ago, I had a customer that was saying, well, it's going to overheat. I says, what's going to overheat? You got coolant running through that thing. But we do allow ventilation through it. In fact, there's a trick to it. And in some cases, it only consists of a lid and three sides, and no bottom, no side into the unit. But there's a lot of ways we can do it. All these are basically what Kinetic's philosophy is to use our technical knowledge and our expertise. We use custom products and apply all that knowledge and the products to non-standard applications, or what people would think are non-standard applications, where you apply as much knowledge and standard product dimensions and sizes and types, and just clean up or finish up a corner of the solution with something non-standard. So that's been our success. I think our, in closing out here too, Robert, I think, and you can elaborate after I, is the fact that we really, in all these data center noise issues, and data center is just one thing that we're talking about today, but people say noise control, who do you work with? Anybody that's making noise and needs to quiet it down. And we work very much in as a team. You know, I think that when we go into a project meeting with a new client, before we receive an order, we're just kicking around ideas and they're telling us their situation, is we're sitting on the same side of the table with each other all the time. It's not that you and us, we go into a meeting, we're sitting on the same side of the table, and we're all one team now with the client. And I think we also want to know, you know, what their maintenance people have to say, what the equipment supplier has to say. We want to know what their thoughts are. If they need us to speak in front of us, city officials, or give them backing, or help the acoustical consultant or architect with valuable information, or the mechanical engineer, we're here to do that. So I think immediately we become part of the team, you know, well before even the project gets kicked off or goes out for bid. So I think that's really interesting. And the key thing to everything we do, Robert, is don't void the warranty on the equipment, isn't it?
Right. Well, and the takeaway is we also need to look at every job's different. We have many different ways of dealing with it, from just absorptive panels to walls to stacks to full enclosures. There are multiple options of ways we can handle it or deal with it. There's options, different costs, different applications, and it depends on how loud you need to reduce it, how much you need to reduce, and where your receivers and noise sources are in relationship to each other. And we have different options.
We do. We have a, what I say, a big toolbox. What might work for this person, you know, owner A, might not work for owner B, and for various reasons. In the end, we want noise control. We want low pressure drops. We want easy maintenance. We want meeting local noise ordinances and things like that, and to be part. And we are a manufacturer. That's what we do. We just don't sell bill of goods, right? We sell through engineers.
Right. And in some instances, they also like it for security reasons. They say, oh, you want to have a full enclosure, or you want to put acoustical louvers on one of the walls instead of being open, you know, or bird screens or whatever. You know, there's all kinds of things we do.
We had that one where they had a three-sided barrier wall system making a noise block panel equipment yard. Noise Block's Kinetics trade name. It's our acoustic barrier wall panels. Making a three-sided barrier wall system up against a commercial building. I think it was a school. And or it might have been a government utility. I don't remember. But they didn't want, and we had acoustic louvers on one side. They didn't want a roof on it, but they didn't want people to be able to climb up the acoustic louvers. It'd be very hard. I couldn't do it in my today. I probably could, but I wouldn't do it more than once. Is climb up a 12-foot wall of acoustic louvers and then jump in to the equipment yard, and they didn't want that to happen. So you looked at a couple of different things, I think. I think you looked at putting acoustic louvers across the roof, or you also looked at...
We ended up going with a pergola roof with a large spacing, and then they went ahead and used a pergola roof for support for a chain link fence.
A chain link fence they put up there. So
basically, they need something to hold that chain link up with. So
they used the pergola roof.
The pergola gave them added additional noise control as well as something to mount to.
You know, that's kind of what we see that a lot of times in different areas of the country where people are stealing copper and they'll put a chain link fence around and they'll put a chain link roof too. That's really interesting.
Well, some of our outdoor noise sources are, it's just a chain link fence already up and they just attach curtain to it. I mean, that's simple. I mean,
you're right.
But
it's that simple. And for everybody out there, that just that comment about chain link fences and our composite curtains that are meant for outdoors, they block sound and they absorb sound, and you can have factory installed grommets, and then you can wire tie or nylon zip tie to a chain link fence. You know, some people would say you can't do that because chain link fences aren't strong, and when you put this curtain up, it becomes a sail. There's wind forces. No, you have to design for that added force on the columns of a chain link fence. And so you put either kickers, or if you can, you draw each column with a horizontal tube back to the building. So there are ways to do it. We usually never say can't. If we say that it can't be done, then it can't be done. In other words, we don't say it often, since we have a big toolbox. We have our own structural and mechanical engineering teams on staff and acoustic expertise and all our products. So, you know, Robert, you and I never get a chance to sit down. We're always so busy. We never get a chance to sit around and kick around here and have this discussion. So I really appreciate us kind of slowing down and talking about some of these topics.
Yeah, well, and a lot of them, they come up on a regular basis. So that's why we're putting this as a podcast.
Yeah, you know, I really appreciate everybody else. Thanks for joining us. We're happy you were able to listen in, and hopefully we'll have another one of these on other topics, and so we won't be strangers with you. We'll be back. Right, Robert?
Absolutely.
All right, folks. Have a good one.